I could come up with the usual boring presentation about Cocoon. It's like what it is, what it does, whatever, blah, blah. But that's not. This is not the usual presentation you normally see. This is a visual journey through what I think, in my mind, Cocoon is. It's only visual. I try to reduce the words to as little as possible. All the pictures you've seen is the pictures I took in my world traveling. This was shot in the coast of Oregon last year. And so, what is Cocoon? Now more than ever, we need people who can lead humanity towards technology that improves society, rather than technologies that simply improve of technology itself. Now, that's a simple vision, maybe a little pretentious. But seeing so many people gathering in this room for this vision, it's impressive for me. Because Cocoon is designed for people around the concept that many different people with different skills work in different projects. So you have people that are designers, people who know how to program, people who don't care about programming, people who don't want to program. And you have to empower all of them in a framework that is not designed like HTML for a single scientist doing all the work on his, in his office. Because that was the original vision of the web. But the web turned into clusters of big groups that worked on big tribes. This follows power laws. I don't know if you guys are familiar with some of the power laws, but it means that information and power tend to aggregate in clusters. This requires an entirely different way of thinking about self, and which design for people. We're also not afraid of looking at things from a different angle. Things look the same if we change the angle. Sometimes they don't, like in San Francisco. And we're guided, but not trapped, by open standards. We're not afraid of saying, we want to support this feature because we believe it's wrong. And we're also not afraid of inventing our own technology to show us something that we believe is true and correct. And we're also free to make mistakes and to prove, to experiment in an open way. Everyone can join the community and say, hey, I think you're wrong. I will not say, shut up and go away. We'll ask them to provide reasons for their concerns. And if those reasons are good enough, we might change entirely their direction. It happened several times. The transition between Cocoon 1 and Cocoon 2 was led by a guy that entered the room and said, fuck you guys, you dumb, that's bullshit. Well, why? Because if you stack this, you know, you lose a lot less memory. Gee, you're right. And we have to rewrite the entire thing, but we did, because we're not afraid of move on and admit our mistakes. That is John Stevens, by the way. We also tend to be creative and original. Of course, if there's something good to copy, we copy. But we're not afraid of inventing stuff. And something that many people fail to do, we look at the past for inspiration and for mistakes that were already done. For example, in the transition between, you know, in Cocoon 2.1, we introduced FlowScript. I think FlowScript touches concepts and mistakes that were done in the 50s during the transition between finite-state machine programming and procedural programming. We are back on the same track. We have to look at the past to understand why Go2 was considered powerful in the 60s And why finish state machine from the web programming might be the next harmful thing to be considered. We might not be there yet. We don't have a D-shell that says that. Well, but we look at the past. We'll have no fear of innovating. No fear of saying, hey, but only Cocoon supports the sitemap, it's proprietary stuff. We don't care. How can you say proprietary when you have the source code? It's open, it's free, you can change it, you can drive it. What is proprietary there? Proprietary is lock-in. The sitemap is Cocoon only? Yes. Is it lock-in? I don't think so. But we also try to balance between innovation and compatibility. Because we value compatibility. We are our own users. I use the system, you use the system. Are you afraid that I'm going to change everything radically tomorrow? No. Because I would have to change my own stuff as well. Because all of us are users and developers. All of us know how this works in real life. We're not making games here. We are doing serious professional stuff. Cocoon is highly modular, componentized. You can plug and play, you can plug different things, you can move around, you can exchange it, improve it, do stuff, but yet solid. Because design should be modular, design and concept. Like the Apple car, that something we spent years thinking about. And we care for the details. Maybe it takes 6 months to polish the schema for the sitemap. The difference between generate and generator. You say, I don't care, it's just a schema. But for us, it's a big deal to make sure that the API, the contract that we give you as users, are polished. And we look at all the details. We're not afraid of spending time and move the release away unless we are really sure that we can provide stability on those contracts. Design and community. One of the reviewers told me, what is that mud? It's sand. And all the little paths are little animals that crawl out of the sand and move. I thought it was a beautiful picture of, I think, what a community looks like. Little animals, bigger animals, things that change. The shape is hard to define at the end. It doesn't look coherent. But there is a structure. There is no single man that drives the process, but it's the organism that organizes itself and moves on upon the constraints that the environment creates on them. So it's highly evolutive, highly able to go fast and match the needs of the real market. After the philosophy introduction, we get to the concept. And creativity is making the complicated simple. Now, did we succeed? Well, Cocoon is a hard thing to understand. There are a lot of things it's built on. 25 different other projects built on in different technology. We support probably all the XML technology out there. But the core, I would like today, here, to give you my idea of what really Cocoon is in few, really few details of what are the important concepts. First of all, separation of concerns. Maybe you didn't know about separation of concerns before coming into Cocoon, maybe you did. It's not something we invented, it's a simple concept. But very powerful. It's basically separating concerns. You have concerns overlapping, and you separate them. Everyone like an old man, everyone would tell, yeah, I know, it's a simple concept here. You should do what you do best and let somebody else do the rest. Great. But you need to provide a contract. A contract is something that has to connect the two worlds, the two concern islands here. Understanding and designing a system using a metric, a measurement that says, yes, but are we sure that we're separating concerns? That thinking that is in that I personally used for my own design, and I think I injected all the commuters into Kundalini. Every time they do something, they think, am I separating concerns or not? What kind of concerns I'm working on? Should I separate more? Should I separate less? But this kind of thinking allows you to measure your design before you actually go into developing, which is a great thing. Normally people, other people design, rush, write the code, release it, and they find out that there was a mistake in the original design about applying separation of concerns to the people that we use that for. I'm not saying that we are perfect. We are improving as well. But this concept allows you to plan ahead, think, design, measure what you're doing. And in Cocoon, we realized that for a big website, this is probably the four contracts and how they, the lines are the contracts, the areas are the concerns. These concerns items are separate, should be separate, should remain separate. Now, you don't see any acronym here. There's no technology around. Where is the contract? I don't know. Maybe it's still moving. Is the separation between content and style XSLT? Maybe, maybe not. But this is not technologically oriented, it is more of a concept. When you realize that these people should work independently and should be allowed to work independently, and you also measure the other web technology and say, hey, you can't do that with PHP, you can't do that with ASP.NET. So let's get to the design of the system. And to create, one must first question everything. Get back to where you started, understand what choices you made in the past, and question the very simple choice, like, is the server API enough? Many people today take for granted that what J2EE gives you is enough. If you can't do it, it's either your fault or it's your fault. It's never the design's fault. So the architecture of Cocoon. This is Cocoon used into an application server. You have a bunch of clients, the web server front, could be inside or outside the application server. Then you have, it might have other web applications going on in parallel. Then you have Cocoon and connect to web services, data sources, or content repositories. I drew data sources and content repositories differently because I think they're different beasts and should be treated differently. That's the simple picture, that's it. When you have an architecture like this, you have multi-channeling capabilities. Try to do multi-channeling with JSP. No way. You know why so many people in Europe care about Cocoon and not many in the US? Because Europe has more multi-channeling needs. That's the simple reason. But pretty soon, the US will need multi-channeling, and we'll find out that Java server spaces suck. And you can't do that. They're designed over HTML. But HTML is just one of the possible channels. Maybe 99% of the content created, yes. but it's not going to be so in the future. We are prepared for this. So let's get in. You have the Kamalaya interface or the Surya interface. That connects to, this is a very simple view of cocoon, of course, but to give you the idea. The silent process is the heart. Everything that drives everything else is inside the silent process, which today contains the flow controller inside. I wrote it like this because flow controller is not related to flow script. It might be separate, might be abstracted. But flow is part of the sadhana. Well, separate from the sadhana, but it's a concept that is over there. You connect to the component manager to get all the components you need. Sadhana components, parsers, FSLT, processor. That's where Avalon fits in the picture up there. You have the cache. Cocoon without a cache would be, well, too heavy to do stuff in real life. But with the cache, we can really go fast. And the pipeline, who drives the creation of the resources. Pipelines, they are something that you get in Cocoon only. Very few web projects are so designed to use components at the resource creation level. Without, you can do an entire website without writing a single line of Java code. And this is a Java-based technology. Sometimes you forget about that. So, today, we don't have blocks. But I'm going to show you Cocoon as we have blocks. Because I believe Cocoon 2.1 without blocks is kind of limited. You get the source-only distribution, who so many complain about. That's because we don't have blocks. Well, real blocks. So I'll show you what blocks are. What are going to be. So this is what is going to happen in the future, near future, when we implement the block system. Blocks will be components at the application level, at the web application level, that you can drop in your container, like you do with Wires for Tomcat, like you do with many things, maybe JB's containers, for example. So we have the block deployer. The user will connect to the block deployer through a pluggable user interface. You can use a command line, you can use a GUI solution, an Eclipse plugin, whatever. The community will decide why. The block locators will connect to the network and fetch blocks, or locally, to a local library if you want to install your own block. Or to the block library, and this is a service, a web service, that Apache will, Cocoon will give for you to do automatic discovery of blocks that you depend on. Say, you want to do PDF serialization, you depend on it, and then you can go there, fetch it, install it. Everything at runtime. On a loaded system. That's the goal. The block deployer will save the wiring information. Wiring is how the blocks are connected and where they are mounted on your sitemap URL space. And in Cocoon, there will be the block manager who will talk to the sitemap processor, the block protocol, which will be introduced, which is like a Cocoon protocol that's designed for blocks, and the class loader, who will know how to load classes depending on the wiring information. And of course, the deploy blocks, who would contain the sitemap components, your resources, everything you need to drive your website. Scenarios of use range from installing your own website as one block on a running system. Okay, I have a new website ready. Okay, follow. Gone. Not like today. It would be piece of cake to install. That's the goal. But also you can install your own block that depends on other blocks. either block the you design or the we design. And this is an example of block wiring. You have the Cocoon URL space, and you have /mail connect to the webmail block, which is a webmail signed Cocoon. You have / connected to your own site block, and calendar connected to calendar. That different shape is a behavior. It's like an interface for a Java class. So you can plug in, you can connect, you know that you depend on a calendar, but you don't know which. So the block librarian will give you a list of potential blocks that are known to implement that particular block behavior, which is equivalent to an interface in Java, for example. And you will choose which one. I want this my company I call plus plus. I want that. All right. And that calendar uses a calendar skin, which again is pluggable, polymorphic. I can switch, change around. Again, I go on the site and say, tell me what blocks implement calendar skin. I call plus plus corporate. Maybe there is iCal++ fancy, which I don't like the color. All right, let's change it. So you plug it in, and boom, it works. Also because iCal corporate extends a site skin, which is another behavior implemented by fancy skin. And extension means that exactly like in Java, you have a class and you extend the other class and you can overload methods. Everything that changes in the underlying class is automatically reflected. Suppose you have a fancy skin, which is maybe the forest skin or whatever skin, and you want to change the logo because it's not the Apache logo you want on your website, you want your own logo. So you provide your own GIF in your own block and you extend the skin. So when Cocoon will look at that logo, we'll look at that first calendar skin. If the logo is present there, we'll fetch it from the block. If not, we'll go back to the original extended block. Fall through. Why this? Because if fancy skin is improved in the future, say there is a bug in the XSLT style sheet, whatever, you don't have to rewrap your stuff. You transparently install the new version in the system and your block still works with the new features without you doing anything. So, and in up there, webmail uses a mail repository. There is no polymorphism there. Simply block A connects to block B. Like class A instantiates class B and uses it. So you see from this wiring all the potentiality of the new block system. This is not implemented yet. We'll be in Cocoon 2.2. We finished design. During these days, we're ready to start implementing it. But I wanted to show this because I think you should be already starting to plan ahead your design, already separating concerns at this level. Can I separate stuff? Where do blocks fit? Where can I design things so that are modular enough? How can I really separate concerns? Because separating concerns at this level allows you reuse. For example, I can reuse the mail repository in another web application that maybe it's not a webmail, and so on. Another thing I think is really important for Cocoon is the flow. The flow is today implemented as a FlowScript engine, and it's based on continuation. Continuations are a concept we God out of scheme. There were papers running around, white papers that showed how country nations were used, could be used on the web to improve the way we do web programming. Now, country nations was not new, especially not new on the web. The first use of country nations on the web is in Yahoo, 1995, in Lisp. The entire marketplace they had at that time was written in Lisp. By Paul Graham, the guy who came up with Bayesian spam filtering, for example. So it's not a new concept. But Lisp and Scheme tend to be rather difficult for our average program to grasp. They tend to be like scientist languages. So we thought, well, Scheme is never going to work for us. We need something friendlier. Friendlier, not because I think we users are idiots, it's just because they're just not used to that kind of syntax, that kind of mentality and thinking. So, we used PostScript in JavaScript. And this is basically how it works. The user sends a request to the sitemap who matches that request to a map call function. It means if you access this URL, call the flow script with call this function. This function is called, the script is executed, the script can do anything. Can load a NinjaDB, can save on database, whatever. Connect to your own Java business logic, whatever. At some point, it needs data from the user. Maybe it's a form, maybe it's something else. So it has to, in theory, stop, wait for you to fill that data, get back the data to the script, and continue. This is simple enough. It's like when you do comma line programming in C, you do this. You want an input, you say, okay, input block, and your program stops. There. The whole machine, the whole process, is waiting for you to enter data. On the web, this was never done. The program was executed all the time. And the state was transferred using a state machine. We believe that thin state machines on the web, well, you say, I personally believe, many people, well, some people don't agree, but I believe that thin state machines for the web are bad. They're hard to write, hard to maintain, and it's hard for you to understand what's going on when the thin state machine grows. If you write a script, a program, if then else, it's much easier. So at some point you need data, exactly like in the comma line, you wait for someone to enter data there. We stop the execution of the flow script, we freeze the execution of the flow script. We save that stack, that say instruction pointer and local data, like you do on interrupt, for example, in a CPU. When a CPU is interrupted, it saves the state of the execution, executes the interrupt, and then goes back on regular scheduled program. Here, we freeze the execution. We go all the way back with a response. With a continuation ID, I'll get later to that, encoded somehow in the URI as a header parameter. Then the user enters data, say a form, whatever, gets back with a post, a click, or JavaScript, anything. Goes back to the sitemap matches again that request, and calls flow script with a continuation. The continuation ID indicates which frozen state you should be using to continue. Because imagine you have a lot of people accessing this at the same time, you have lots of continuations. And even the same person might be creating lots of continuations during the process because it might need several times to go back and fetch data. And you go there, you re-execute the flow stream, you continue and you finish. When you're done, you do send page, which means, alright, I'm finished. Send the page, but don't create any more continuation. And the user receives the final response. This is not how you create an entire web application. You still need sessions and the ability to save stuff, because otherwise you would have to pass the continuation ID around all the time. But for wizards and highly detailed flows of, you know, this is incredibly important. I suggest that you take a look at this. You might find your speed of development improved tenfold. Also because JavaScript doesn't need to be recompiled, installed, blah blah. You simply write it, reload, it works. It's amazingly fast to prototype. And Cocoon is fast to prototype. You can do simple stuff, beautiful stuff as well. You can just apply a style sheet and it applies to all the pages. You can show your customers really fast what you can do with this. In a matter, Paul Graham used to say that when the marketplace was running in Yahoo, every time somebody else outside their company came up with a new feature, they spent a few hours implementing it. And by the time the guys had a press release, they already had it in their system. The speed increase of productivity of tools like this are something that is incredibly important in a market where, you know, you have to be fast and faster than anybody else. But there's something else that is not, if that use of FlowScript is the first, it's more widely known, there's something else that you can do with FlowScript which is really important. And it's pipeline T as T. You go on one side and you also go on the side. For example, you want to call your pipeline and save the output of the pipeline somewhere, on disk, on a resource somewhere. You don't want to write your own Java code serialized when you have a serializer in Cocoon. I want to use that serializer. So, you do the request, the matcher is done, you call the function in the flow script. At some point, the flow script wants to create a pipeline and save it on disk, for example. So it calls process pipeline 2, which is one of the three methods of the flow script. One is send page and wait, send page, and process pipeline 2, which a URI which identifies that pipeline. The pipeline is executed, and the output stream of the pipeline is given by you out there. So you open a file, new file output stream in JavaScript, you can do it normal Java classes there. You create an output stream, you pass it along, and the pipeline will save the data on that file. Close the file, and return to you. That's powerful. You can do, you know, magic things with it. At this point, you return your flow script, and then you send page, which matches again another pipeline. The pipeline is executed, and the response gets back to the client. So the client doesn't see any of this happening on the server side, but you actually have two pipelines going on. One that gets to the client, another pipeline that gets somewhere else. And you can call process pipeline 2 as many times as you want. This is useful, for example, to, I don't know, create huge PDF files on disk for caching, for example. Anything. So, what's the machinery inside? This is how I visualize the components of Cocoon. This is a generator. Anything enters, even nothing. exact events are created. They have a transformer are different from a generator because they take such events and they spit such events. Then you have a serializer, which does the opposite of a generator, takes such events and creates anything. It's symmetric. Why do we do this? Because we cocoon adapt everything into XML, works on XML, and then adapts to the rest of the world. This was considered a limitation years ago by many people who looked at cocoon and said, come on, not everything is XML. No. But anything can be mapped to XML efficiently. And this gives structure to your thinking as well. Because once you have data in XML, you have multi-dimensional structured data, which is really nice to work on. Much better than text, much better than images, much better than stuff that's normally freeform. Or has a format, but it's hard to manipulate with the same tool. With XSLT, if you adapt everything to XML, you can use XSLT for anything. Or you can use XInclude to aggregate new stuff, for example. But then we enter a new realm. This is planned, not implemented yet, but we will be implementing it for Cocoon 2.2. And it's called a virtual generator. It's a pipeline snippet. It's a piece of pipeline that you want to reuse in different places. So basically you create a virtual component that is actually not a component, but two components glued together. You name them and you use them as they were one. And also you can have a virtual transformer and a virtual serializer. Then you have the aggregator. The aggregator is drawn more or less like a generator because that's what it is. A generator has a specific syntax because we believe that aggregation is an important feature. So even if it's not it's not something you could create your own aggregating generator and use that, but we believe it's important enough to get actually into the Scifunc syntax. So that's how it works. You have different parts that are fed into the system. These parts can be attached to a specific namespace, for example, to layer data so that it doesn't collide, and then you can process it later. Aggregate from different parts. You can aggregate from external resources or from internal sub-pipelines, anything. Also you have the reader. The reader is simply something that reads. Why do we have this? Well, some people like to have everything in the sitemap, even serving pages that are not processed by Cocoon, say HTML static pages, PDF pages already generated, maybe by teams, images, something that is not easily transformed into XML and worked on, say a movie, something that is not easy to XML, or would not make sense to do. This is also proxy friendly. We try to be as proxy friendly as possible so we can have proxies up front that allow the Cocoon to improve the speed by not reaching request back, simply by caching up front natively instead of going all the way down to the Cocoon cache through the web server, application server, blah blah blah, and then back just to save something that's already cached. And also there are machineries inside a sitemap that drive requests. The matcher. The matcher simply matches or doesn't. Request comes in, if it matches, goes into the pipeline that is connected to this matcher. If not, keeps going. Or the selector. The selector is inside the pipeline and selects between different routes, depending on particular parameters. This is all abstract. These are concepts that are really abstract. In fact, in Cocoon, we share a bunch of implementations of this concept. There is a selection based on IP address, based on request parameters. You can name it. You can do selection based on machine load, and for example, move to a smaller style sheet, like a low graphic style sheet, when the bandwidth is under load in order to reduce load. This is a simple system to reduce load. And we can do many things with it. And call. Call is a way for Python to move the execution in some other place. And it's the connection between the sagna and the flow. Today you can call a resource, which is simply calling another pipeline. You can call a function or a continuation in the flow. And you also have the ability to redirect, like many times you want to. Or you can mount another sagna inside the other sagna. This allows, for example, for different groups to have access to different sagnas and be isolated. So you're responsible for that URI space of your department, and you shouldn't be touching anything else. So I give you that sagna, and I know how to mount it and where to mount it. So you are isolated, you can do damage. And at the end of the pipeline, you get the handle error call, which simply is like a try-catch thing in Java, that simple handles the potential errors that you get in the pipeline and visualize them. Now the handle error will trigger another pipeline, because the handle error is actually a generator that generates XML information about the error, and then you can apply it in style sheets to visualize the errors differently. So this is an example sign-up. You get a mount point up front to connect to another sign-up. A bunch of meshes that connect to pipelines. The first pipeline is a straight regular pipeline. The second one has a selector. The third one is aggregated. The fourth is simply a reader that may be major. And then you have calls to flow script for a redirect for maybe URLs that were retired and moved someplace else. And at the end, if there's no matching or if something happens, you get an error. So that's it. And, well, this was not a presentation that was able to give you all the information about the Cocoon, but at least knowing that you don't know, it's a good way to start. So thank you a lot, and I'm here for the questions.
Thank you, Stefano. Are there any questions right now? Just like one or two, because we're running a bit late.
Yeah.
I'll repeat the question.
Okay, come in. Same one.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for an inspirational talk.
You're welcome.
I feel as a developer with Cocoon, not of Cocoon, but with Cocoon, that sometimes I get lent by the inspiration as well. And my question to you is this intentional? When I see the future of Cocoon, I see it merging philosophically with another project, and I'm wondering, are you aware of this project, and have you been comparing it with Cocoon? Do you know what I'm thinking of?
I think I know. A lot. I mean, JBoss introduced similar modular capabilities. That's, for example, one thing. Many people complain about, well, there's Genie, for example, has a system that is... Well, be more explicit.
MIT has a project called
Paper. I've heard about it.
Yeah. It's connected to the Mac web. And they're claiming be the killer app, the coming killer app will come in.
I heard that claim before.
Especially for them on TV.
I heard about it, and I'm really interested in those things, but I think it's probably not a good time now to talk about that. Maybe I can talk to you later.
Sure.
But to answer that question, which is an interesting question, not about hashtag, but in general, sometimes we don't know about our product. I mean, we cannot know everything. But at the same time, sometimes we do know what other people are doing, and sometimes we would like to experiment ourselves with our community and maybe make mistakes. Because sometimes it's better to do your own stuff. We have enough capabilities to do what we want. Enough power and enough great programmers, not me, but other people are. That personally I think it's better for the community to experiment and learn. Yeah, making mistakes is a great way to learn. So for example, for blocks, there are many ways to do blocks, many ways of doing component models. There was a discussion recently in the mail list about integration with Avalon. They're doing similar stuff, and I personally believe it's probably better to do our own stuff first, and then later on join forces if the need emerges from the community. That's my, of course, my personal opinion. I cannot speak for the community. Any more questions? All right.
Thanks again, Stefano.
You're welcome.